Hello, I'm Carmi Levy. This is number 0467, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0467. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, we have another visit from clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber, who talks about why more and more people are making silly and frivolous calls to 911.
When people call the police because six-year-old set up a lemonade stand and didn't go to the city and get the proper business permit, that's kind of a mental health issue right there. That person who's making that call does not have the ability, in my perspective, to manage and control their own life. It's not enough for them, so they have to go around and try and control everybody else and exert their authority on other people.
Animator Tom Winkler, creator of one of my favorite games called Whack Your Boss, his latest online work is called Silly Swipes Executive Branch.
It features the President of the United States standing on a branch, a physical branch, and it's very precarious, the position he's in, standing on this branch. And the Silly Swipes concept is that you swipe up and he does something funny, you swipe down, you swipe left, you swipe right, and you control him and you make him go the direction you want to go and you make him say different things. And then if you tap, you also get a wacky cartoon response from him.
Mark Kingston Levin, author of the sci-fi novel 30th Century. The story involves people from the future coming back into our current time.
Jennifer is from the 30th century, and she is a member of the Secret Society of Scientists, which is abbreviated SS, and they are nonviolent, and they are fighting a species which we developed to settle future worlds far away in other solar systems, but somehow took over the Earth, became the dominant population, and then they began to think about getting rid of the humans.
And we have lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0467, was Carmi Levy, director of content marketing for the Infotech Research Group. Thank you very much, Carmi, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. By the way, in addition to being an all-around neat guy and someone who's really up on social media and all things tech, Carmi is a very, very, very good photographer. You should check out his work if you get a chance. Again, thank you very much, Carmi, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb to say that this will probably be one of the weirdest stories you have heard in a long time. So follow along with the chronology on this one with me, okay? Back on January 25th, 71-year-old Alan J. Abramson of Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, went for his regular pre-dawn walk to Starbucks. What happened on the way stumped police investigators until March, and on July 13th, they made their findings public. Images from a surveillance camera show Abramson walking out of his community at 5:35 a.m., and about a half hour later, the sound of a gunshot is heard. Just before 7 a.m., a dog found Abramson's body lying near a walking path. Police found no weapon, no signs of a struggle. He still had his wallet and phone, and investigators initially worked the case as a homicide. But as they dug deeper into the man's computer searches and purchases over the past 9 months, a theory developed. Abramson had tied a gun to a weather balloon filled with helium, shot himself, and then the gun drifted away to parts unknown. A thin line of blood on Abramson's sweatshirt indicated to police that something with the approximate width of a string passed through the blood on the outside of the shirt, the final report says. As for the balloon, investigators say it would likely have ascended to about 100,000 feet and exploded somewhere north of the Bahamas in the Atlantic Ocean. Wow. Now that is the most elaborate Rube Goldberg suicide masked as a murder I've ever seen. This was a man with a plan. Regardless of how you feel about suicide, you truly have to admire his creativity. If a screenwriter had put that into a movie or a television show, you wouldn't believe it. Wow. Just simply wow. Okay, it's time once again for Minor League Baseball promotion fun and games. This time, however, the Montgomery, Alabama Biscuits managed to tick off a whole generation of baseball fans. The Biscuits announced Millennial Night on July 21st, featuring participation ribbons just for showing up, a napping area, selfie stations, and lots of avocados. While some Twitter users thought the promotion was insensitive, others were more philosophical. 21-year-old Dallas Godshall said, "More than targeting millennials, it's sort of targeting older generations who like to make fun of millennials." Pitcher Benton Ross weighed in, "If it's insensitive, maybe they should just have thicker skin." Well said, Benton. Well said. Picking on millennials, by the way, is basically low-hanging fruit. Why, it might even come up in talking to the first guest on the show this week. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Wait for it. After a car sailed through a stop sign in Rock Hill, South Carolina, police pulled the car over and noted the driver had mustard all over his hands and face and generally appeared sloppy and disheveled. 46-year-old Mario Maurice Barnes had been eating a submarine sandwich while driving, but the real problem is what he was washing it down with. "Take me to jail," Barnes suggested. "We both know I'm drunk." A breath test pegged Barnes's blood alcohol level at 0.24%, and he was booked for DUI, plus driving with a suspended license, his third offense. And you know, it seems way too many of these stories we have on the Stuff File program involving a car, involve someone with a suspended license. You'd think they'd learn at some point, but they don't. And yes, he had mustard all over his hands and face, but it's good to know that the police could catch up with him.
Aww.
Yeah, I know, that was a bad pun. I apologize. Puns are like contagious diseases, and I often talk to a friend of mine who, in the pun world, is Typhoid Mary. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police in King's Lynn, Norfolk, England, pulled over a car. It was missing various parts, including a quarter panel, bumper, and headlights, and one of the tires was flat. The officer found there were also missing parts on the inside, too, including the driver's seat and the steering wheel. The driver was sitting on a bucket and steering with a pair of mole grips, or locking pliers. According to a post on Twitter by the police, the driver was cited with too many offenses to mention. Well, at least being impaired wasn't one of the offenses mentioned. By the way, back in the day, I believe bucket seats had an entirely different meaning. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Listeners to this show hear the wacky stories that make up the news on the show. You also hear an idiot of the day at the end of each program. What seems to be somewhat sad for humanity is over the years, these stories are easier to find. One category involves people with a sense of entitlement where they feel the need to call 911 for the pettiest of petty issues. What has happened to humanity? This is yet another reason to talk to clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber. He's the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, which is a nonprofit organization, and he joins us on the line from Texas. Hi, John.
Hello, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on the program with us once again. Now, I have to ask this first question in all honesty. I've got to find out, what is the fine line between something that is truly a mental health issue and something that's just plain stupid?
Well, you know, it's kind of pertaining to setting priorities. What is important to you? And when people focus on the minutia, oftentimes it means they can't handle the big picture. Okay, so that could be a sign that you just need mental health work, period. But when we talk about what do you call the police on, it kind of, the line starts getting blurred. I mean, we joke about this stuff, and we talk about people copying coupons and using coupons over again and things like that. And there's actually a huge financial loss every year in the United States for using coupons fraudulently. But when people call the police because, you know, a six-year-old set up a lemonade stand and didn't go to the city and get the proper business permits, that's kind of a mental health issue right there. That person who's making that call does not have the ability, in my perspective, to manage and control their own life. It's not enough for them, so they have to go around and try and control everybody else and exert their authority on other people. That oftentimes is a sign of some extreme mental health issues right there, period. So I would say that person needs to go check themselves in to either their local therapist or maybe call their general practitioner and say, hey, I think I have some problems here.
Now, you mentioned coupons, and we should mention we have examples of three stories that deal with silly calls to 911. One of them is a Virginia man who called the cops after being fouled in a basketball game. Number two, and by the way, it's not confined to the United States. Number two comes from Canada. It comes from Hamilton, Ontario. A guy called 911 because he was angry when he received cold McDonald's food via Uber Eats. Now, in all fairness, one has to truly understand that I've always maintained there is some sort of chemical imbalance in the rate in which McDonald's French fries will get cold. That is not takeout food. It never has been. You can't get more than 20 feet from McDonald's before your French fries are like steel knives. So that I don't understand. And the third one, which is what you related to, is there's a cell phone video of a woman who was at a CVS store. The manager called Chicago police after she tried to use a manufacturer's coupon, not even a facsimile, a manufacturer's coupon at her neighborhood store, and the guy called the cops. And I don't know if you've seen that video, but his hand is shaking so much. You get the feeling that I'm surprised through the course of the phone call to the police, because she taped him or filmed him while he was calling the cops, and his hand was shaking so much holding the phone to his ear. I'm surprised he didn't soil himself.
He might have. I mean, that probably wouldn't show up on the videotape.
He looked terrified, and this woman, all she was doing was recording this incident and giving her name so he could give her name to the cops, and explaining how to spell her name. And it's like, oh dear Lord, what has happened with society?
Well, you know, in that kind of case, I think there's probably something inherently wrong with that person. Maybe some disorder like Asperger's or something like that, and he didn't know how to deal with the social situation. It didn't fit in with his construct of what payment was. And, you know, people can get into positions like that and not have had to deal with a lot of stuff. And all of a sudden, he's being called on the carpet, he feels, and it can be quite a traumatic experience for that person, not necessarily understanding the use of coupons. Now, I worked retail when I was in high school, and we had some managers who came in who, right out of college, who'd never worked retail. They'd never been on a sales floor, let alone run a register. And they're out there telling everybody what to do. And when a problem comes up, we knew better what to do than they did. And it created some situations where those people were quite uncomfortable. And, you know, that has to do with real world experience. And that individual obviously did not have that. He'd probably seen all the loss prevention videos about how people thieve and steal from stores and businesses using coupons. And so that was probably a major red flag for him, and it freaked him out.
Now, I'm just wondering if there is a long-standing cause to what is now an effect. And I don't want to I don't want to pick on helicopter parents who have raised millennials, but as you know, everything before a but is a lie, so I guess I just am doing that right now. Is this part of the problem where, you know, these little snowflakes were raised in a way that they could do no wrong and everything was all right with them and life was perfect, and then they get out into an imperfect world and can't deal with it?
That is part and parcel. That is part and parcel to the whole situation. When you turn that around and now you see them getting all their social interaction through a computer screen where they can essentially have the last word and turn the thing off and quote unquote win the argument. And now they can't do that in real life, and they have to actually look a human in the eye and make statements and communicate with them. It can be quite a daunting experience for those millennials.
I also watched the video of the guy who had the cops called on him because he fouled someone else in a pickup game, and he seemed very pleasant and agreeable, and even saying that the guy who called the cops is a nice guy, which is, you know, very, very turn the other cheek on this guy's part, because, you know, for most people, that next game could be a death match.
There's certain things you don't want to do in life. You don't want to tick off your nurse in the hospital, and you probably don't want to tick off one of the refs in a sporting game, because you're going to see them again at some point. So, it could have turned into a death match, and it probably had, you know, that guy turning the other cheek. He knew this person. And he probably realized that this person couldn't handle certain situations and just went ahead and, I'll call the police. I'll be here, you know, and just dealt with it. That's the good thing. I mean, because the majority of us are like, call the police, just like the lady with the coupon. Call the police. Go ahead. If you've got to do that, do it. Here's how to spell my name. Here's my driver's license. You want my date of birth? Whatever. Most of us are pretty much like, it's a game. Really doesn't matter anyhow. The police officer is going to be more frustrated with the person making the call than with the person who did whatever they claim to have done.
You mentioned a few moments ago some of the things people shouldn't do. I also maintain that you really shouldn't send food back to the kitchen. That's just playing with fire, literally.
Never. Never. You know, never do that.
Because you don't know what kind of snowflake is in the kitchen.
Exactly. And if you need a reason, just go watch that movie, Road Trip. You'll never eat French toast again. Just saying. Anyway.
Dear Lord. John, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. I don't know if we've solved any issues in this case. And I know I'm still going to hear more silly 911 calls. I mean, it is my stock in trade. So, seriously, I don't need to necessarily want them to go away, because that's how I make my living. But it is kind of sad in a global way.
Well, remember the old adage, you know, how many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? Well, it only takes one, but the light bulb has to want to change. So these people have to want to change for it to get better. So I think you're safe. I think you've got material for a long time.
John, thanks for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you, Peter. You have a great afternoon.
Dr. John Huber, Chairman for Mainstream Mental Health. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0467, and you'll find links to John's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Batteries not included, some assembly required.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the creator of the game, Whack Your Boss, to find out what he's been doing lately. Also, Mark Kingston Levin, the author of 30th Century, a sci-fi novel, is on the show. We have an idiot of the day coming your way as well, plus much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, a Massachusetts man was arrested at a New Hampshire Planet Fitness after he did naked yoga on the public gym floor. When police apprehended 34-year-old Eric Stagno, he reportedly told them he thought the health club was a judgment-free zone, referring to the gym's franchising marketing slogan. Stagno was allegedly naked when he used the gym's yoga mats. And aren't those mats gross enough? Yeah. Anyway, according to Plaistow Police Captain Brett Morgan, yes, that's right, Captain Morgan, the story we got from witnesses was that the guy walked in, stripped down right there in front, left his clothes and belongings at the front desk, walked back and forth across the gym a couple of times, and then settled in over at the yoga mats. Morgan went on to say that gym-goers who witnessed Stagno's nude routine said they felt disgusted, sick, and unsafe. Stagno was released on $1,000 bail. We're assuming he left fully clothed. I'm going out on a limb here to say that I sense some body shaming. I'm guessing that if Stagno was anything reminiscent of a male model, then gym-goers wouldn't be so disgusted, sick, and unsafe. Just saying. The aftermath of a McDonald's meal often isn't pretty, but if you have to strip naked when you go to the bathroom, maybe you should find another restaurant to visit. But that was probably not the reason police found a naked man doing jumping jacks in the women's bathroom of a McDonald's in Tennessee. Police were summoned to a McDonald's in Nashville due to a male subject who was locked in the women's restroom naked, according to a court affidavit. Restaurant management reported that the man had been there all day. A patrolman reported encountering 25-year-old Brody Young in the bathroom. Young was erratic and doing jumping jacks and hitting the wall, reported the cop, who noted a strong chemical odor in the bathroom, evidence that the intoxicated Young had likely been huffing. Deemed a danger to himself and others, Young was taken into custody and charged with several misdemeanors. He has been barred from entering the McDonald's. Well, I guess he can go to Chipotle's. I mean, at least they're used to strong odors, strange sounds, and long uses of their bathrooms. Oh dear, there goes the Chipotle account.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is an important self-serving promotional bulletin. My book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars, is still available. And like the title says, within the pages you'll find some of my celebrity encounters with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer. Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner. Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar. A host of TV icons, plus two guys who left their footprints on the moon. Order it now. It's available in hardcover, softcover, and for your e-reader on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website at BearManorMedia.com. All links are on our website at TheStuffFile.com. So, buy the book. What are you waiting for? This has been an important self-serving promotional bulletin.
I love you. Now, back to our show.
Pennsylvania state troopers were called to a disturbance in Lamar Township where, they say, a man was shooting his revolver in the air to scare off the aliens who were firing green lasers at him and his girlfriend. The couple had run into a neighbor's house to ask them to call 911 for help. As they pieced the story together, troopers say they were able to figure out the aliens and lasers were actually fireflies. And 30-year-old Jesse Shields and 22-year-old Catherine McCloskey were high on bath salts. The homeowner was able to get the gun away from Shields, who seemed okay with that. He asked if he could take a shower and get the goo off of his skin because it burned. The couple was jailed to sober up and face several charges. You know, this whole night could have been different. If only Jesse had bought real bath salts instead and settled into his own tub. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, you know, with all the dangerous synthetic drugs out there like bath salts, which we just mentioned, crystal meth and Molly, just to name a few, some seekers of expanded consciousness are turning to a more natural means, a much more natural means. Wildlife officials in Arizona said toads are being stolen from a conservation area, and the thieves are believed to be planning to lick them. The Spur Cross Conservation Area's official Facebook page posted footage showing multiple people taking Sonoran desert toads late at night. The post said the case had been turned over to the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office to seek charges, including violation of the park's posted hours and vandalism. Randy Babb, an Arizona Game and Fish wildlife biologist, said the thieves were likely planning to lick the toads, a practice that induces hallucinogenic effects similar to DMT. Sonoran desert toads are the toads of choice, and they harvest the poison from them and then ingest it, Babb said. They're the largest toad in the Southwest. They can reach sizes of more than 2 pounds and can live up to 20 years. Gee, they must be living long because of all that affection. I mean, some people like to be licked. I'm not saying I'm one of them, but I've heard stories. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Former Simpsons animator Tom Winkler is back on the program. He's the guy behind such games as Whack Your Boss and follow-ups like Whack Your Computer. To bring us up to date on some of the new projects he's working on, including a new iPhone's launch, Tom joins us on the line via Skype from Los Angeles. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Peter.
Nice to have you back on the program with us once again. As I was saying to you just off air before, I went back to Whack Your Boss because I feel it's almost something we need these days. You created this game many, many years ago, like about a decade ago now. Did you think they would have staying power, or it would have staying power?
I guess I didn't realize how epic it would be, but I did have a sense. Sometimes I do a litmus test first where I did a couple of the whackings. If you're not familiar with the game, there's a cubicle scene and a boss berating the employee, and you click on items in the cubicle to get the boss to stop talking. I did a few of those scenes where the employee picks up the stapler and bludgeons the boss, and I sent it to a few friends, and I got these calls and people laughing, you know? And that just sort of, I just sort of had a sense that it would, maybe I'm going on too much here, but it was, I did feel I tapped into a vein, which I think is universal or international anyway.
Now, since the game has been out for quite a few years, I'm sure you get some feedback from people, from friends. Does it surprise you which one of the various scenarios are the favorites of those who are out there? Because I have my favorites.
Oh, what's yours?
I like the clock and the water cooler.
Oh, thank you.
Are two of my, and also the chair. I like the chair as well, too.
Ah, thanks. Yes, we leave the cubicle.
Yes.
Here. I personally like the scissors just because of the amount of blood that covers the cubicle. Other people have their favorites, and yeah.
Well, since you mentioned the blood, that's the other thing I wanted to bring up, and that, you know, we live in such a politically correct world these days. Have you had any pushback on, you know, some of the things that take place in the game?
Well, yeah, it's 15 years later. I really started the game. I built the first version of it with 6 whackings, and now there's up to 27, I think, or 24 on some websites. What was the question? I didn't take my Ritalin.
Have you had a lot of feedback or pushback when it comes to, you know, political correctness these days?
Definitely. You know, the web truly was the Wild West 15, 20 years ago, and the idea of free speech, you know, really was like beautiful and really was a big part of it. And I, you know, now especially with the two big corporations, Google and Apple, controlling what goes on to those phones, because you can't have an app on those phones without them approving it first. Wow. So now those two corporations, people would think of as the internet, which is their phone with a bunch of icons on it, really isn't the internet. It's a company filtering things for you to see.
Hmm. So what are you, I mentioned in the introduction that you have some new iPhone launches. Tell us what you've been working on lately and what these new launches do.
Well, thank you. I'm the newest one is just a few days. It just launched a few days ago. I really haven't even started promoting it yet, but it's called Silly Swipes Executive Branch, and it features the President of the United States standing on a branch, a physical branch, like, and it's very precarious, the position he's in, standing on this branch. And the Silly Swipes concept is that you swipe up and he does something funny, you swipe down, you swipe left, you swipe right, and you control him, and you make him go the direction you want to go, and you make him say different things. And then if you tap, you also get a wacky cartoon response from him.
And again, we're talking about something where people are so polarized these days with politics, and certainly over the President of the United States. Are you concerned about any pushback from this?
I am a little bit. It's more done in playfully. This is more playful. There's nothing. There's no killing like in Whack Your Boss. There's no blood. It's not like that. And it's. But definitely, you know, I think both sides could easily take offense if you make fun of their side. But yeah, it's. You know, I'm certain that I will get some comments eventually that say, you know, something rude. Place I should go.
What are the inspirations for the apps you come up with? Like, what's your process?
Not unlike the president, I go with my gut. But I really do. I tend to just, it tends to be, you know, not so much like what kind of a business do I want to start, but it tends to be more like what makes me laugh and what is funny. And on the Android side, I was able to get the Duty Man farting app onto Android. Apple has yet to approve it. I'm still trying to make some tweaks to get Apple to agree to it. And reverse also the president app, where it's called Silly Swipes Executive Branch. I haven't gotten yet on Android, but I will. What was the question again? My mom usually gives me a Ritalin at this time.
It just seems interesting because you brought up the point that
The inspiration, right?
Yeah, the inspiration. But you also brought up the point that you have to go through the approval process, and you mentioned that earlier when talking about Google and Android. And it seems like one of the things that people have complained about, and I mentioned in the introduction that you were a former Simpsons animator, it seems that when people talk with about the overlords that they deal with, be it the television networks and whatnot, it was always the assumption that there was some sort of free range when one went online. But you're saying that now it seems to be even more controlling than network televisions were.
Well, and they use words like safety. We want to create a safe environment for our viewers, you know, and it's, and I get it. And I thought that we lived in the United States anyway. I thought that it was a country where free speech reigned. I mean, and I don't want to be too controversial here, but I always thought that Nazis could march and just let them have their march. Let them say, now, if they start to say this Thursday, we should kill 100 people, that's different. But if they want to say, we think we're better than you because of the color of our skin, I thought the U.S. was a place where you could do that, and people would actually go, I don't like them, but you know what? At least we live in a country where they can say that.
Right. So besides working on the apps, what else have you been doing? Because, you know, an animator is an animator. I guess you can't stop drawing, especially after Mom gives you the Ritalin.
We'll probably get a complaint from somebody calling saying I'm making fun of Ritalin. What else? I've got a YouTube channel that has over 100,000 subscribers, and recently the corporate world, they pulled the Duty Man cartoon, which had 40 million views. Can you believe it? They pulled it saying it was pornographic. I'd always like to find the person that finds Duty Man to be arousing. but, and And he's the superhero who goes to the bathroom on the bad guy. So now I've got this channel with all these subscribers, and I'm trying to work out what to do next. What do I want to do? What's a little more, you know, G-rated? What's fun to do? What do I enjoy doing? You asked before my inspiration. It really starts with that spark. You know, as an artist, I think a lot of people think that you're reaching outwards for the next idea, when sometimes it's right on the tip of your nose, you know. And I've got an ex-girlfriend here. We talk on the phone sometimes, and I just happen to do these voices when I talk to her, and she's always cracking up, and she's always saying, "Tom, you got to do something with those voices." And it's so right there on the tip of my nose that I go, maybe she's right. Maybe I should just do some YouTube stuff with these funny voices that I do and kind of go with my gut again, go with something that's funny to me rather than, you know, well, it looks like these hang gliding video channels are doing really well on YouTube. I'll do the same, you know.
Well, you mentioned the YouTube channel. Let's let people know where they can find you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I guess the main one is Doodie, Doodie.com. And then the YouTube channel is identical, but it's spelled out. So the dot is spelled out, D-O-T. And Doodie Man is the superhero. Doodieman.com, same spelling, D-O-O-D-I-E. And then, of course, WhackYourBoss.com. Where you can go online and play the Flash violent game online on your laptop. But then I did make, ultimately, a Whack Your Boss, because so many people search for it, I felt obliged to put something in the stores. So I did make a Whack Your Boss that's clean and squeaky clean, and that lives on the app world on both Android and Apple.
Tom, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Peter, it's an honor, and I hope you have a great day.
Tom Winkler, creator of the extremely funny and violent online game Whack Your Boss, which you can find at whackyourboss.com. As he mentioned, his latest work is Silly Swipes Executive Branch. You can find his work at doodie.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0467, and you'll find links to his site and also his YouTube page. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Ahoy, I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you been to the beach yet this summer? If so, you might have noticed something missing that's usually there. A lifeguard. More and more communities have stopped hiring lifeguards. It's not because there's less danger, though. In the Midwest, 98 people drowned in the Great Lakes in 2016, a sharp increase from 55 the year before. Despite more deaths, many communities on the Great Lakes don't provide lifeguards anymore because they're worried about being sued if someone is injured or dies with a lifeguard on duty. No lifeguard, no lawsuit. Let's be fair, it may be easier for communities to post signs saying there's no lifeguard on duty, but it's not better for those using the beach. In Hawaii, where safe beaches are crucial to their economy, they've addressed that problem by passing a law giving lifeguards immunity from liability. Even though personal injury lawyers have opposed renewing the law, it has broad public support and could be a model for other states, too. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, coming to you from Montreal, Canada, where we share the longest unprotected border in the world with the United States. Take that as a sign of extreme friendship. Or a warning.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to science fiction writer Mark Kingston Levin. His book is called 30th Century. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. Here on a show that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. I got a few more Stuff File stories to share with you right here, right now. A Russian man who has covered more than 90% of his body, including his eyeballs, with black ink tattoos, underwent surgery on July 14th at a hospital in Guadalajara, Mexico, to remove his penis, testicles, and nipples because they spoil his body art. Let me repeat that. He has removed his penis, testicles, and nipples because they spoil his body art. How do you find a doctor who will agree to this? Anyway, 32-year-old Adam Curlykale of Kaliningrad, an albino, was diagnosed with cancer and started the tattooing process 12 years ago to cover scars left behind from the disease. "I always knew that I was different from the rest of society," Adam said. "My favorite color, for example, has always been gray in different tones, and that's why my current skin color is graphite." He plans to finish the process by inking his remaining untattooed skin. I've seen pictures of this guy. Trust me, ladies, you're going to want to swipe left. Okay, there are people in government these days who say things that are just so far-fetched and so ridiculous that it's hard to believe a word they say. And believe me, those people are not confined to any one particular country. Case in point, Brigadier General Gholam Reza Jalali, the head of Iran's Civil Defense Organization, announced in a press conference on July 2nd that Israel is manipulating the weather over Iran to prevent rain. Israel and another country in the region have joint teams which work to ensure clouds entering Iranian skies are unable to release rain, Jalali said. On top of that, we are facing the issue of cloud and snow theft. However, the head of Iran's meteorological service was skeptical. Really? He's the only one? Anyway, he said, "It is not possible for a country to steal snow or clouds. Iran has suffered a prolonged drought, and this is a global trend that does not apply only to Iran." You know, I'd say the Brigadier General has his head in the clouds, but apparently there are none. Yeah. A cheeky seagull embarked on a life of crime on July 14th in Gloucester, Massachusetts, by plucking a man's wallet from the top of a pizza box and carrying it onto a nearby roof. Phil Peterson was on a cherry picker hanging lights nearby and offered to retrieve the wallet, which was being picked apart by two baby seagulls, literally trying to eat it, Peterson explained. He tried to distract them by throwing bread at them, but that only turned their attention to him. "It was like the movie The Birds," he said. "I was afraid they were going to pick my brains." Quick-thinking bystander Mike Ramos borrowed a flashlight from a police officer and used the strobe feature to discombobulate the birds long enough for Peterson to sneak in, grab the wallet, and bring it back to Earth. "It was just the craziest thing I ever saw in my life," Ramos said. Yeah, I'm sure Alfred Hitchcock would be proud. Tippi Hedren, not so much. So, those birds were trying to eat leather, huh? Sounds like they're fans of Charlie Chaplin. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? What will humankind be able to accomplish by the 30th century? Can we hope for the technological advancements and global peace envisioned in Star Trek shows and movies? Scientific researcher Mark Kingston Levin is the author of the novel 30th Century. Dr. Levin joins us on the line right now from San Diego. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you doing?
Jess Tickety-Boo, thanks very much for being on the program with us. You have a vision of the future that seems to be more, shall we say, optimistic than a lot of dystopian science fiction that's out there.
Yes, I do. I think AIs are going to be good for us. Artificial intelligence may keep us from killing each other.
And you also have certain qualifications as a professional yourself to write about science fiction. I mean, you have worked on space missions yourself or leading up to space missions, correct?
Yes, I worked on Apollo and I was involved in the Mars program very early on before it got canceled.
So tell us a little bit about your journey from being a scientist, as you are, to writing science fiction.
Well, I was a scientist for a while as a pure scientist, doing theoretical physics and theoretical chemistry. But then I founded a company to manufacture sensors using quantum technology and quantum theory to develop this remote sensing technology. And I sold that company, and then I started another company developing more commercial sensors. And when I retired, in 2014, the reason I retired is I wanted to write science fiction, and that would just what I really, I think, I was made out, was cut out for.
Even before you retired, did you, on the side, do any writing? Was being a creative writer something you always wanted to do as a hobby in addition to the profession you were already in?
Well, my mother was a poet. My grandmother was a journalist. So when I was a youngster, I wrote poetry in my teens. And then I got kind of busy in college because I played football. And it's like a full-time job plus going to school. So I didn't have any time to do it then. But later, I did start writing a little bit, and you know, decided that, well, it's something I wanted to do, but being a CEO, I didn't really have the time. So when I retired, I tried to retire for a couple of years, but they kept asking me to stay on, train my replacement, which I did, and then finally got to retire in 2014. So I was able to start writing. I retired in the 12th of December, and I started writing January 2nd. So it was a quick conversion, yes. Took me 2 years to get my first book out.
Well, tell us the story that takes place in 30th century. It actually involves a little bit of time travel back to our current century.
Yes, it does. Jennifer is from the 30th century, and she is a member of the Secret Society of Scientists, which is abbreviated SS, and they are nonviolent. And they are fighting a species which we developed to settle future worlds far away in other solar systems, but somehow took over the Earth, became the dominant population, and then they began to think about getting rid of the humans. So Jennifer has to go back in time to, because the Sindos have a very strong immune system. They've evolved since they were created, and the virus that was created to correct their DNA, they have a defective DNA which makes them sociopaths, and she wants to correct that. And so the only way to do it is to go back when they were children, and that's in the 27th century. So that's what she does. She finishes the development of this first time machine. And it's only a one-way time machine, so you only go one way. You can't go back. And that is, her team all goes to the 27th century to correct the problem, but she goes to the 21st century. And the reason why that becomes about as clear as mud, that's something she just had an obsession with. She was a historian and an archaeologist, and she wanted to go back to that time. And she felt that Kylie, her second-in-command, was quite capable of doing the task at hand. So that's how it's set. And, you know, she goes through lots of struggles because when she comes to the 21st century, she's on the island where the French did their nuclear testing. It's called Mururoa, and she's... has to survive on basically lobster and shellfish and coconuts. And, you know, it's a pretty hard life, but she eventually gets rescued.
As I mentioned in the introduction, when I first started talking to you, as a science fiction writer, you don't necessarily have that dystopian feel that a lot of science fiction writers seem to have when talking about the future. But as your story suggests, it does talk about correcting a mistake that humanity has made by going back into time to fix it. Is your story a bit of a cautionary tale?
Well, I think it has some caution in it. I think we all know that we cannot control everything we do, and sometimes we make mistakes. So we need to be really careful when we're doing things, particularly genetic engineering, because there are... so many factors. It's so complex that making something, if you think a simple factor like removing a certain type of genetic disease, might create another problem in the gene pool. So we have to be extremely careful, and I think it's cautionary in that way. But in the end, things come out well, and we do see, you know, through the whole, the 30th century is really the trilogy, so it's three books, and I think we're very positive in how the world evolves, and how humanity can really even exist with other species, and how we are going to adapt, if of course we're lucky enough to find them.
You say it's a trilogy. When you first started writing, did you envision it as a trilogy, or did you just start writing and realize you had more than one book in you?
Well, I kind of wrote the first draft, and it was about 1,100 pages. So I immediately realized you can't publish it as one book in today's market. But if, let's say, if you were James A. Mitchner, and you wrote Hawaii, well, it was 10,095 pages. So it was one book, and it was really, you know, a trilogy all in one book. But in those days, people liked large books. Today, we don't have the same time as the readers did in the past. So we tend to want shorter books, you know, 200 pages, maybe 300 pages. So you're going to see today trilogies or series of four books or five books, rather than having the large novel, which nobody wants to produce because it's too much risk.
I mentioned in the introduction Star Trek, television shows and movies. Again, you have this trilogy, 30th Century. Do you envision that it will leap off the pages, not only just in the readers' minds, but perhaps be on television or in the movies? Would you like to see that happen with your story?
I would like to see it happen. I particularly think the last book in the trilogy is ideal for science fiction movie, but certainly could be a series. And I'm not an expert in that area, but I would love to see it happen. There, science fiction is hot right now, so maybe there's some chances of that happening, but I don't have any immediate contacts that tell me they want to make a movie out of it or a TV series.
It is a trilogy, as you've mentioned, but now that it's done, are you finished with these characters, or do you feel that there's more you have to say about the characters contained within your trilogy?
Well, I started a book four, so I guess I'm thinking I fell in love with my characters. I don't want to really kill them off. You know, it's kind of like Sherlock Holmes, and he wrote 61 books in his lifetime. Because when he tried to kill off his character, all his fans wrote him and said, "We want you to keep Sherlock Holmes. He's our hero." So there wasn't much entertainment then. There was no TV, you know, nothing but books. So he stuck with it. You know, he was a doctor.
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah. Right.
Well,
exactly. Arthur Conan Doyle.
You are a doctor as well, too, and we hope you keep up with it. Mark, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Mark Kingston Levin, author of 30th Century. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the page for this show, which is show number 0467, and you'll find links to Mark's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
In Nashville, 20-year-old Antonio Freeman knew he had a problem when three police officers approached him as he rolled a joint. He also knew there was a bigger problem in his pocket, a plastic bag full of cocaine. In a bold move, Freeman pulled the bag out of his chest pocket, crushed it in his hand, and sprinkled cocaine over Officer Ryan Caulfield's head and into the air in an attempt to destroy evidence. The officers were able to salvage about 2.5 grams of cocaine and charge Freeman with tampering with evidence along with possession of a Scheduled IV drug and unlawful use of drug paraphernalia. Now, why? Oh, why? In an attempt to get rid of cocaine evidence, would you think it would be a good idea to sprinkle it over the head of a police officer? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0467. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0467. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.